Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to begin our adventure into the tales of one Dr. Indiana Jones. With 1981's Raiders of the Lost Ark, directed by Steven Spielberg.
This movie came out before The Empire Strikes Back?
The Empire Strikes Back was 79, wasn't it? It was 79, because we saw it in California.
So, Empire Strikes Back, and then Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
That's nuts.
It was a good couple of years for all those guys. Friends.
Yeah.
So, Drew, is this was on your list, right?
Yes. Yeah. My list of, why don't we talk about something fun for a while?
Excellent.
Boy, we misjudged this one.
Oh, can I tell a quick story about this movie?
Of course. That's kind of the whole premise of the podcast.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah. I was telling listener Michael today that you can kind of tell toward the last month or so when we get to the pod, when I'm editing, I'm pretty good about getting rid of all of the ums and little things here and there until I get to the housekeeping section. And then I'm a little bit more lenient. And I think to myself at some point, well, maybe I can just like stop editing at this point and just kind of let it run. And it'll be fine. And then I realize, well, I can't do that. And the more I listen to it, the more I realize, okay, I have to fix these little things. Well, but he actually interrupted me after, said, well, when I get to the housekeeping part, he goes, no, that's the best part. No, I get it. I understand that. Yeah. Nobody actually comes to the content, but still, I appreciate your listenership. My daughter and I watched this movie front to back.
Wow.
Which is odd because she doesn't really like scary stuff. And she's easy to just pull the plug. So it was wild, like when the movie started and there was these spiders. Well, actually, the movie started, she's like, is this one of these old time things where like a big rock rolls down the thing? And like, no, honey, this is the old time thing where the big. Yeah. And then when like you saw the spiders, I'm like, nah, don't worry about movie spiders. And then, you know, you see the dead folks. It's like, no, movie dead folks. And then, you know, is possibly the main girl dies. Like, no, she's the main character. She's not going to die. Now, she had to cover her eyes for the face melting scene at the very end. I did warn her about that. It was fine. But it was a great experience. I was like, she was actually paying attention and everything, which, again, means way more to me than it does to her, I'm sure. But
of course it does.
Yeah. But this is the thing. You know, this is the kind of stuff that I hear other people talk about. Hey, I used to watch Peter Sellers movies with my dad, you know, whatever. It's Mike Myers, I think, saying like that. Thinking, wait, I can replicate that thing, share a common interest with my daughter. But this is the first time it's actually really happened in a non-cartoon format. Now, maybe it's because she's getting a little stir crazy of wondering about things to do. But still. Yeah. So, Brother Jay, you suggested this wasn't quite as fun as you remembered it as a kid.
Well, it has a different tone as an adult watching, also being in the year 2020, because this movie has some very tone-deaf parts. Not the least understatement of which is that he's a pedophile.
It's 1936. That was before pedophilia was a thing.
I refuse to believe that was canon.
Well, anyway.
But listen to her speech. Her speech in the movie.
Well, okay, hold on. Hold on. Because the love interest in this movie, Karen Allen, plays Marion. I mean, come on. Karen Allen looks a good 35 in this movie. Now, she's supposed to be in her 20s, right?
I did not get that impression.
You didn't think she was supposed to be in her 20s?
No, she's lived a life.
Yeah,
her dad was like an old man.
Yeah. Yeah. But Jason came up with a 90-page document for us this afternoon.
Yes.
I was shocked. I will let you tell us about all of the 90-page document. I did skip to the part where you sent us to, where they were discussing that Marion has a line that says she was 12 years, it was 12 years ago or whatever, that he walked out of her life and broke her heart. And she was just a child.
She is 9 years younger than Harrison Ford.
Yeah, and how old was Harrison Ford in this movie? I mean, he was, at the time, he was probably a good 52, 53?
41? I mean, I don't know how old Indiana Jones was.
No. Well, this is a cartoon. This is based on the serials of the 1930s or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, according to Wikipedia, Marion entered into a relationship with Indiana Jones during the time when she was 15.
Yeah, well, 15 is in 2020, 15 is a crime and horrible.
Jones was 27.
But that's not great. But in 1936, she should have been on her fourth kid at 15.
Yeah, but this movie wasn't made in 1936.
But it portrayed 1936.
Yeah. Oh, so it's supposed to be historical?
Well, there are, I don't know, right at the time this movie was made, there was about 98% fewer Nazis.
Well, I don't know that there were 98% fewer Nazis. I just think they were less obvious.
Okay, I'll give it to you. There were probably 70% less Nazis. Anyway.
Boy, right off the rails.
Yeah, well, from today's point of view, that's horrible. And the fact that he was a teacher taking advantage of students. But again, that was a thing. I don't know if it was just a trope or a real thing or probably both.
No, it's a real thing. We know, we've met people.
Oh, that's true. Oh, and actually, it's we met people who ostensibly have a love story that started like that. But we're also familiar with people who went to jail for things like that. You know, teachers of ours.
Mm-hmm.
Or Satch. Teachers. No, I was going to say, yeah, teachers we followed the exploits of in the newspaper. And then we had to follow the exploits of in the newspaper for a different reason. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Good times.
It's not usually a good thing when they name a law after you. It means either you are dead or you did something real bad. So, Drew, what did you think about it this time? Do you remember this fondly as a kid?
Yes. I think Temple of Doom was actually my introduction. Which is wild to think about, because that movie is nuts.
No Time for Love, Dr. Jones. That's not going to hold up, is it?
So I think I came to Raiders later, but I had very fond memories of it. I do remember there were several scenes that I remembered very strongly. The burned hand.
Yes. Yep.
The shot to the face instead of an actual fight.
Yes.
That always stuck with me. And then the face melting at the end.
Yes.
Those three things, very, very strong memories. Yeah, so I remember this being like a really fun movie that ended in a really scary way. Yeah.
I also believe, if my memory serves me, which I don't, who knows at this point, that this was one of the few movies we had an original copy of.
We did. Yes, we did. And I was little enough that because the titles were different, even though I loved Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, I didn't make the connection that Raiders of the Lost Ark was
Indiana Jones flick.
It's been rebranded nowadays as Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's not how it was when I was a kid.
No.
Actually, what struck me in this movie, first of all, I was streaming it on Netflix, and the quality was pretty crap, and that's probably because I'm on a cable modem, even though I pay for the highest speed internet, at least, by the way, first world problems, I pay for the highest speed internet available to me. It's taken a little bit of a hit, because every freaking school kid and their mom are taking classes online now, and everybody's streaming using Zoom or Skype or whatever to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. Apparently, all my neighbors are pundits on news shows or something. So it's anyway. So the image quality was kind of bad. And I was like, oh, Journey, I stopped it and started it again. I'm like, oh, the picture quality is bad. She goes, that's because it's an old timey movie.
I think you could also download it too, couldn't you?
Well, I can't download it to my dish device.
Oh. I see.
Yeah, I mean, I could have watched it on my iPod or whatever. It would have been fine. But again, I was having a family experience with my daughter.
Understood.
And, it sort of came and went. The picture came and went. But it was, I think, the opening of this movie and the introduction of Indiana Jones is just brilliant. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that you just see the back of him for just long enough. And when you finally see him, he turns around with the whip. It's just, that's iconic.
Also, Alfred Molina was like 5 years old.
Freddy. He was on Never Not Funny last year, I think. And first of all, it was hilarious that his friends called him Freddy. But he was talking about how they got the spiders to do their thing. Because he has to have the spiders crawl across his face or whatever. And so the spider wrangler, I'll tell his story. I will. Even though my daughter didn't want to hear it because she's like, spiders. I'm like, don't worry about it. Movie spiders. And I've got a story. She goes, I don't want to hear it. Okay. anyway, he said that they put the male spiders all over him or whatever. And then the guy, and they're just sort of sitting there. They don't really do anything. They're just kind of cling there. And he's like, oh, this isn't going to be so bad. And he goes, okay, to get some movement in the scene, we have to get the spiders to move. But, you don't like poke at spiders because, A, it's cruelty and it's lots of laws against that, even in 1981. But no, what you do is you take a female spider and you put it somewhere on the body, and all the male spiders start going at the same time to kind of go and fraternize with the female. And he was like, yeah, this is unpleasant. And again, journeyman actor.
It was just amazing. It was just so young.
Well, and I don't know how you guys felt about watching it now, but I just totally, maybe because now I have a lot of, because I've seen a lot of movies, man. I've seen a lot of things. And I really appreciate that they captured the tone they were looking for in this movie. Because this is a little bit of a cartoon, it's the serial fantastic sort of thing. But it moves along and it's beautifully shot and artfully done. And the practical effects hold up. I mean, bunch of spiders, a bunch of snakes and some contrived traps in a cavern or whatever. That's great.
A real giant ball, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So granted, it was a little weird. I didn't frankly think that when Alfred Molina sort of stranded him on the other side of the little pit or whatever, I was like, oh, how long is he going to have to like try to get across the pit? This is like looking at my watch thinking, uh-oh. But nope, just lasted just long enough that like it was in the theater. I'm sure I would have been excited, especially at that time where movies were slightly slower. See Star Wars.
I like how you rag on Star Wars wearing a Star Wars shirt.
I am wearing a Star Wars, but you know why I'm wearing a Star Wars shirt? Because unfortunately, I forget that I'm wearing it. In fact, I think I told you Kelly was also wearing a different kind of Star Wars shirt, and we went to the pet store, and then we had to have a conversation with the clerk about how big a Star Wars fans we were, because he assumed so. And both of us are like, what are you talking about? Oh, our shirts. Yeah. No, that's because we buy shirts in sizes that fit. This is an acceptable logo for a shirt that fits my fat ass. That's what this is all about. Anyway, I like the shirt. The Millennium Falcon was always pretty great. Great design. Real fun.
Also, this movie spawned two video games, Aztec and Pitfall.
I loved Aztec.
Yeah, Aztec was great. But do we have an Indiana Jones branded Atari game?
Temple of Doom, right?
Yeah, a guy had a whip and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought that was Pitfall.
No, Pitfall.
Pitfall was similar.
Yeah. Pitfall was just a like almost a Donkey Kong thing, but you could kind of make your own. There was an editor function of it, right?
Not on the Atari. But Pitfall had like the vine that you could swing across the mud.
Yes. Maybe I'm misremembering and thinking of something else.
No, it says it was released. It says, it doesn't say Atari though, but it was 85. So,
well, I know we had one for the Apple II, right? Was Must that Pitfall?
Have. I think we had Pitfall 2.
Oh, maybe that was it.
Yeah, I think that was for the Atari. Hmm. Aztec was for the bosses.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, Aztec was for like the original Apple.
I tried to play Aztec within the past 3 years.
On an emulator?
How did that go?
Yes. The instructions weren't stellar, and it was actually very challenging. Because I didn't... Like, there's not much of a point to it. You just kind of go around and explore stuff.
You open chests and try and find stuff.
Yeah, and I think I was conflating it in my mind with something like Castle Wolfenstein. Because there wasn't nearly as much action as I remembered.
Oh. Well, like Ultima 4. Ultima 4 was the greatest video game ever.
I was more of a Bard's Tale 3 kind of guy.
Okay.
I did like Ultima 4.
No, Ultima 4 was my first introduction to how big a game could be. Mm-hmm. And there was a little game. It was strictly made. It was a dungeon crawler game, and it was strictly made. The monsters and the walls and everything were all made out of like your basic typewriter keys characters. Like if you fought like a Lich King or something, it would just be an ampersand or something. And yet it was super challenging. It was just black and white. Mm-hmm. And it had like a text stream in the bottom of it that told you what was going on. And it was one of those things where, yeah, you go around the corner and all of a sudden you see like a dozen trolls come at you. And you're like, motherfucker, I'm going to get killed right here in the troll room. And all it is like little like...
commas.
Yeah, or like, you know, small case E's or something. Each of the trolls. It was...
The schwa.
Exactly. Oh, my God. The schwa.
God, that does sound really familiar.
I can't even remember. It was probably a game like that was passed around from kids at school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that you just put in the floppy
disk. On a 5 1/4 diskette.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Had like a cracked loading screen.
Yes. Well, remember the Azteca or whatever that was... It start that disc that game was on started out with like a 8-bit sound card rip of a Judas Priest lick.
Mm-hmm.
It's like maybe you don't have to be old to be wise or something. It was the greatest thing ever. I mean, for years, it was the most metal thing I've ever heard on a computer. We were so easily impressed back in the day.
I still remember those guitar riffs.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get back to video games we loved. I was going to say, we've
derailed early.
It's really fucked up you brought me on here to talk about this. No, I'm not joking.
You know, what video game like you could take hours of time? Print shop. We could go through definitely dozens of dollars, scores of dollars of printer ribbon, making out banners and stuff, drawing little pictures with gigantic dots.
Hold on, I'll be up for dinner soon. I'm still tearing the wheel strips off the sides of the paper.
Exactly, yeah.
The tractor feeds.
Yes. Yep. Oh, the best. And you have that, you know, that those little that little dust when you rip the tractor feed sections off of the paper, when you actually make that thing, there's tiny little bits of fiber from mm-hmm. the paper that gets out there and goes right into your lungs and gives you cancer like 50 years later. Oh, the best. That smells like childhood.
And for like 12 years, it was acceptable that no edges of paper were ever smooth.
Yes. Oh, how about remembered justified type? Like when you could turn a paper into school feeling like a badass because A, it was typed, and B, it was justified on both sides. So it was really janky looking, but at the time it seemed very cool.
The letters are all stretched out.
Yes.
They were spaced
words
unevenly.
Were weirdly spaced. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the end, the edges were crisp. I mean, the delight of getting a footnote in the right place that would come out and actually stop at the end of a piece of paper instead of being slightly off, and you'd have to like readjust all of the margins and start again to print it.
Good times.
Yeah. Archaeology, by the way, these days, I just heard somebody talking about like going into archaeology. Archaeology these days is a lot of people using, I don't know, it's LIDAR or something, but like ground penetrating radar to look at civilizations without ever digging into them. Because if you disturb it, like if you would go into, if you found King Tut's tomb these days, you would not dig it up and take all of the artifacts and ship them all around the world for people to see. Because that is considered wrong. In fact, you would not, certainly you wouldn't cut down a whole bunch of trees to excavate a community in Central America or South America. Because that would be wrong. And you definitely wouldn't go and steal an artifact from the indigenous people of a place far away.
Yeah, it's no fun anymore.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, so Indy goes to get this thing. He is an adventurer as well as an archaeologist, apparently. Turns out there are rival adventuring archaeologists because after a very iconic scene that we don't really have to go piece by piece, but involves, you know, old-timey stuff like a big old ball rolling down and little arrows getting shot out of walls and
ancient pressure plates that lead to booby traps.
One of the things that Harrison Ford does really well in this movie, at least, and I think in the future movies, which makes him actually probably, well, maybe Star Wars too, because, you know, Harrison Ford doesn't seem to be a super warm guy, but he has these looks he can give, like when he puts the bag of sand on the pressure plate and he's mm-hmm. like, yes, all with his eyes. He's like, yes. And then all of a sudden he turns and then he hears it go down. He's like, ah, again, all with his eyes. Beautiful. Practical effects, man. I don't know if he could do that against a guy wearing a bunch of ping pong balls on his green suit.
Well, luckily, nobody will ever find out.
Exactly. I'm not a Harrison Ford hater. I'm just, you know. Anyway, so Indiana Jones goes through all this hoopla to get this gold thing. And he had, although Jason sent us a meme or whatever, where Indiana Jones is looking at the gold roll of toilet paper.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But he has to give it to his rival, Dr. Rene Belloc, played by Paul Freeman. He's an arrogant French archaeologist who's a longtime rival and enemy of Indy's. So Belloc is a cartoonish bad guy, which is great. But Indy ends up having to run away from the Jorvitos tribe people. Again, not culturally sensitive, but fun in an iconic scene of him running through the brush and getting into his partner Jock's plane and being introduced to how he doesn't like snakes.
He's actually way more chill about it than I expected him to be.
Yeah.
Well, what's he going to do? Jump out of the plane?
Well, you just remember early. I remembered, you know, the whole thing about snakes. Why does it have to be snakes? I hate snakes. Mm-hmm. It probably happens later in the series too, I'm guessing. Although I know I saw Temple of Doom, but I don't think I've seen any of the other Indiana Jones movies. So it's going to be a treat.
You have not seen The Last Crusade?
Nope.
All right.
Yeah. Is that with Sean Connery?
It is. And it's like the worst argument for the people who hated Letterbox back in the VHS days. But we can talk about that in a few weeks.
Is it like only available in pan and scan or something? Or
no, it was available. Yeah, it was pan and scan when it came out. I think you could search out the special Letterbox edition. Maybe not at the time. But.
Interesting. Yeah, we can have a whole conversation about it. In fact, that could be a launching point of a conversation about letterboxing and how it was a thing. Back in my day, we couldn't even see the whole screen on our TV. That's my old man back in my day voice.
I thought you were trying to channel Frank Hill. Damn it, Bubby.
How do you convince your parents that by using less of the screen, you see more of the picture?
Exactly, yes. How can you explain to your parents that you want to pay twice as much as you did for the one you had, the perfectly good copy of the movie you bought last year, but you want to buy the same movie this year where, yes, you have a smaller picture?
Anywho.
Back stateside, Indy is teaching an archaeology class, and his students, the female students, love him.
Really creepy ways.
Exactly. It would be actually a pretty great, I don't want anybody to redo Indiana Jones, but if they did, it would be hilarious to have both male and non-binary students that had the, was it Love Me painted on their eyelids?
Love You.
Love You. Yes. Sorry. I guess, yeah.
Yeah. So the really creepy thing about that is she either had to have somebody write that for her, or she had to write it backwards using a mirror.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
It really is. That's not like a spur of the moment impulse action.
No, and in 1936, I mean, that's gonna stay on for a while. I mean, maybe even past your weekly bath.
Yeah, it was probably like radium or something.
It probably is. Oh, imagine scraping your eyelid with a quill. A quill. Anyway, Indy's friend Marcus Brody, played by Denholm Elliott.
Is this our first Denholm Elliott movie?
I think so. I didn't get a chance to look at the backgrounds of all the actors. I mean, I looked at Karen Allen, and I looked at... maybe that was it, actually, it turns out. Yeah, it's been a busy...
Karen Allen, yeah. When are the three of us going to talk about Starman?
Oh, exactly. Well, right after... The week after we talk about Cruising.
Are we going to do Cruising?
I hope not.
She's on Cruising, is she?
Yes. Yes, she is. Yeah. Also, she was in Animal House, too. But And she's actually in pre-production of the movie, so she's still working, for sure. But anyway, sorry. So,
this is not her last Indiana Jones movie.
No, it's not. Although, again, I haven't seen the one she's in. I don't think so, right? So, Indy is still upset about the loss of the statue, which he believes Belloc has taken to Marrakesh to sell on the black market. So he's found pieces he believes will pay for a trip to Marrakesh to find Belloc. But Indy's friend Marcus dashes his hopes by informing him that two army intelligence officers want to talk to him about Abner Ravenwood, his former teacher, who was his friend until Indiana broke up with his daughter Marion, Karen Allen, from Cruising, Starman, and Animal House. Now, let's see. Let's piece this together in a way that Brother Jay will find palatable.
Why bother?
No. So, Ravenwood was like his mentor or something. And Everything was fine until Indiana Jones not started dating his 15-year-old daughter, but broke up with his 15-year-old daughter. Yeah. Broke her heart. So, as a dad, I could get that. Anyway, the army officers are concerned because they intercepted a German cable concerning a mammoth archaeological dig in the Egyptian desert not far from Cairo. When they read the cable, Indy and Marcus realized that the Nazis had discovered Tanis, which I had forgotten because my only reference to Tanis these days is a podcast. But apparently, Tanis is an ancient city long since buried in a gigantic sandstorm in 980 BC, and the possible burial site for the Ark of the Covenant. Now, is Eric's religious knowledge... so poorly ingrained that for a second I was doing math and thinking, wait, how do you have the Ark of the Covenant 980 years before? Wrong book. So the Ark was built by ancient Hebrews to hold the stone tablets on which Moses inscribed the Ten Commandments.
Wait, what were you thinking the Ark of the Covenant was?
I didn't even put it together. I don't have, again, you know what? I know most about the Ark of the Covenant from a book called Ken's Guide to the Bible. And Ken's Guide gives you...
Ken's Guide.
Yeah, it gives you all of the juicy bits. Like the crazy sex parts, the crazy violent parts, all of the weirdness. And it gives you to it just as a reference. So you can just quickly skip to those steps, those pieces. But the one thing I learned from Ken's Guide to the Bible is the Ark of the Covenant killed far more people than maybe anybody else, except maybe the Pharaoh. The Ark killed a shit ton of people. Like, you didn't diss the Ark. The Ark would kill you for looking at it sideways.
Yeah, as it turns out, that's why Hitler wanted it, right?
Yeah. This is, of course, before we learned from Dan Brown and Tom Hanks that the Ark was really, like, but Mary or something, or the child of Jesus or some bizarre thing, whatever, right?
What?
Oh, no, I'm thinking, see, again, I'm thinking of the Holy Grail. Never mind, different book. So.
Remember when Russell Crowe saved the world by building a giant boat?
So Moses inscribed the Ten Commandments on these rocks, blah blah, inside the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark kills people, but they need to. The Nazis are looking for the headpiece of the Staff of Ra. By the way, this is where my daughter instantly went to the internet and said, "I know the Staff of Ra." I'm like, what do you mean? I know what the Staff of Ra looks like, and she like drew me a quick sketch because she was sketching anyway. I'm like, well, we'll find out, won't we? And then, of course, yeah, it looks exactly like that. I did not tell her that back in the day, I remember I had to find the Staff of Ra as one of the pieces I need to talk to before I got to the Riddle of the Sphinx in a video game. Call back to bad video games. Eventually, we will end up talking about, because this is how it always goes, we'll eventually talk about how we couldn't get past the Babelfish or Babelfish section of Hitchhiker's Guide.
True okay. Story.
Yes. So, blah, 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 Staff of Ra, blah, 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 army men were impressed by Indy and Marcus's knowledge of the Ark, but Indy tells him that the most qualified person is Ravenwood, who's been living somewhere in Asia for several years. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da. It's a Gary Glitter joke.
Yeah, I understood the reference.
All right. So, when Indy shows the agents a picture of the Ark, it depicts...
Did he flee to Asia or something?
Yeah, he lives in Cambodia because he's a pedophile. Yeah. Or maybe Thailand. Yeah. That's why you don't hear that in Jock Rock anymore. He unlike Indiana Jones, he was proud of it. Proud, proud, proud.
Didn't he initially try and get out of it by saying it was research?
That's Pete Townsend.
That Pete Townsend, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Gary Glitter embraced it. Wholeheartedly.
Okay.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Marcus says very gravely that any army that carries the Ark into battle is invincible. You know, Hitler was kind of involved in the occult or interested in the occult. It's amazing the stories you read about trying to collect artifacts and whatnot.
Yeah, he was a lunatic.
Yeah, well, you kind of wonder what American generals or leaders were maybe doing behind the scenes that we would hear a lot about if we had lost the war.
The Manhattan Project.
Yeah, maybe. So.
That was back when the U.S. government used to believe in science.
Well, I don't know. The Men Who Stare at Goats. That's that's just a fun movie we should watch. Have you seen it, Jason?
Who's in it?
George Clooney. Brad Pitt. Yeah.
It's Brad Pitt in that movie?
Doesn't he get his head blown off? Am I thinking of a different movie?
You're thinking of a different movie.
Okay.
I think. I don't think anybody dies in the in Sarah Coates. I just remember George Clooney cloud busting.
I just remember Brad Pitt playing like a brainless...
No, you're thinking of...
I am thinking of a different movie.
Yeah, you're thinking of that Burn After Reading.
Ah, right.
Which I've never seen.
That's very funny.
Goofy Coen Brothers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was bored with it, so I never saw the rest of it after the first, 20 minutes, maybe.
Brad Pitt is very funny in that movie.
Yeah. Brad Pitt's actually a certain funny, charming guy. I mean, again, I wouldn't want to hang out with him in person, probably. Although he probably has, according to Tom Hanks, he probably has a better body than Colin Jost.
Did I tell you guys that I watched Mr. and Mrs. Smith recently?
No. How was that? I don't think I've seen that actually ever.
That movie is great. That movie really got buried in the real life controversy surrounding it.
The Brangelina stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really fun movie, and they have really good chemistry in that movie.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, me either. We should put it on the list. Is it fun? I mean, is it a happy movie we can talk about during pandemic times to get our minds off the real world?
Yeah, that's actually why I watched it.
Perfect. Excellent. Okay. So back to watching a Nazi movie to feel better about the current times. Indy flies to Nepal through, again, my favorite movie trope we've seen all
week. Lines on a map.
Yes, to Casablanca and all that stuff where he flies to Nepal to speak to Marion Ravenwood, who runs a restaurant
on
bar.
On his plane, there's a creepy-looking sweaty dude.
Yes. Ronald Lacey is the actor's name. Creepiest guy ever.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Perfect kind of Peter Lorre, skeevy character. So, Marion turns out she's a woman who owns a bar who can outdrink any man there. She's got some issues.
And somehow it turns this into a commodity.
Yeah.
This talent of hers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, notwithstanding the fact that she owns the bar, so the person she's having a contest with has to pay for all those drinks anyway.
This is back when alcohol poisoning was hilarious. Although I'm sure there are people that still have drinking games, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Seems bizarre to me.
There's actually a drinking game associated with our podcast. We have to take a shot every time we go off on a tangent.
Oh, crap.
43 people have died.
I say, how many people have I killed on my own? I apologize. Okay, mm-hmm. So we get to meet Marion, and Marion is a piece of work. She's great. She's exactly the sidekick Indy needs. Well, sidekick isn't the right answer. She's a woman who charismatically matches up to Indiana Jones until she gets damsel here. But
get there. She's great. She is way better than the one in Temple of Doom.
The one that Steven Spielberg eventually married?
Yes.
Ah. Poor Amy Irving. I think the thing that offended me at the time was just the bad perm. That's all. That's the only thing about Kate Capshaw I don't like. She had bad hair.
I thought Amy Irving had the bad perm.
Didn't Kate Capshaw have a perm in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? I could be wrong. I probably am. We'll find out.
This is the mid-80s. Lots of people had bad perms.
Half of the ladies and a quarter of the men had bad perms.
See also Richard Marx.
Remember those Ogilvy commercials?
Yes.
Take a shot.
Beth and I wanted to knock them dead at our reunion. She got a salon perm, and I gave myself an Ogilvy home perm for a lot less. At the reunion, friends said, "Did you always have such gorgeous curly hair?" They told Beth, "Nice perm." Precisely Rice got automatic shut-off timing. You can't over-perm or under-perm. You just can't get it wrong. People said I looked better than I did in school. So much for the salon.
I can just remember the smell of perm chemicals. Actually, here, take a shot. I also remember going to get a haircut from the family beauty operator, and I arrived there to get my haircut, and she was outside smoking, Drew may have been with me during this. She was outside the, like on the curb smoking because she had just chemically burned this lady's head.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep. She's like, come on in.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, yeah. There are no chemicals with my hair, but.
Yeah, smoking to get her hands to stop shaking.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oh, if that, let me tell you, if that salon could talk. So, Marion, blah, blah, blah. We end up getting this great thing where, you know, so Indy's going to get the headpiece of the Staff of Ra. And Marion's all like, oh, no, you don't. And she is completely drunk and yet just fully capable. So she must have a serious drinking problem. But she kicks Indy out of the bar, tells him, come back tomorrow. And after Indy promises her like $3,000 and more, I guess what she gives him, he gives her $3,000 and promises her more. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to come back the next day. And then, was it Tot? His name of the German guy and his goons come in and they want the headpiece. And it's turns out she's wearing the headpiece as a chain around her neck. But before the Toth guy comes in, she like puts it on a candle in the middle of a table, sort of a big old
centerpiece.
Yeah. So when Toth comes in and says, you know, I'm not going to do any accents, but he says he wants whatever. She doesn't have it with her because it's on this table hidden, but you know, only we know that, which is great. And then this big old fight ensues and Indy comes back and gets involved. It's very cinematic and a little silly, but super fun. And it climaxes with the bar catching on fire and having the bar burn down like around them pretty much.
And
which heats up the headpiece of the Staff of Ra. And when the Nazi guy sees it, he crawls over to grab it and burns his hand and he has to run out and put his hand in the snow. So she eventually gets the headpiece back. And now she and Indy are partners because Indy has burned down her bar indirectly. However, the fact that they have the headpiece of the Staff of Ra turns out does not mean that they're the only people who will find out roughly where the thing is buried.
It's true. Find out later. Did either of you look up how much $3,000 was?
Oh, in 1936? Uh-uh.
It's like 55 grand.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And he promised her five more when they got back to the States.
Oh, sweet. But then he burned down her bar. Well, again, indirectly. Mm-hmm. So, I was going to make a white snake joke, but I'm not going to.
Make a TLC joke.
Ah, different kind of joke. That's actually, the TLC joke is much funnier. Sorry, I'm yada-yadaing a little bit because it's, you know, the action scenes are super fun. Don't get me wrong. Super, super fun. But then they fly off to Egypt to see Indy's pal, Sala, played by John Rhys-Davies. And what do we know John Rhys-Davies from?
Lord of the Rings.
Is there a guy named Jonathan Rhys-Meyers?
Yes.
Okay. Not the same guy. All right.
No.
So, Sala is one of the...
Wasn't he Henry VIII and the Tudors?
I'm not sure. So, Sala is one of the country's most successful excavators in Egypt. And he's working on the Nazi site. And he reveals that the Nazis are aided by a French archaeologist with a funny name. Belloc.
That's not really a French pronunciation, right? Belloc?
No, I'm sure it's not. The dig has uncovered much of Tanis, but they'll never find the Ark's location without the headpiece. But Ancella knows a man who can read the ancient inscriptions that give the precise measurements of the staff. Because that's the other part of it. What you need to know, which for the whole thing to work, is you need to know the length of the staff. You put the headpiece on it, you stick it in the right thing, and then the sun comes out at the right time and hits the point on the map on the floor that tells you where to dig to find the Well of Souls.
As angels sing.
It's standard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Later, while shopping at a Cairo bazaar, Indy and Marion are attacked by sword-wielding Arabs working for Nazi agents. This is the sword-wielding Arab...
That's a really fun sentence.
You know, if you think that the Disney movie Aladdin, the animated film, is shockingly racist. This movie just more like takes an entire like race of people and just makes them buffoons. Much like the indigenous people of whatever island that was, and all Mongolians or Nepalese.
Yes.
So,
by the way, Jonathan Rhys Davies was also in the TV show Sliders.
Oh, nice.
Does he have a scar on his cheek?
For all you Jerry O'Connell fans. Carrie Wurr, right?
Oh, Carrie Wurr. Yes.
Yeah.
The best.
Sliders was in my wheelhouse.
Will Sasso, too.
Carrie Wurr was in my wheelhouse. Hellraiser 7. I think it's called Hellraiser : Deader. It's the worst. It's the most obvious movie that they already had a script for that they just threw Pinhead at the end and call it a Hellraiser movie.
She was, by the way, she was also voicing Gotham by Gaslight.
Yes.
Oh, good stuff. Don't get me wrong.
Extremely talented lady. Of course she's still around.
Yes, exactly. I admire her work as a thespian.
She was in Sharknado 2.
Yeah, she was.
Sharknado 2, the second one.
Have you seen all the Sharknado movies?
No, I've seen none of them. Are you kidding?
I recommend.
No.
If there's ever a marathon on the Sci-Fi channel.
Nope.
That you do.
Nope.
Because they're just so bad.
No.
I'm going to resist going off on a Sharknado tangent. Because we're going to talk about the Sharknado series here pretty soon. So, yada yada, we end up with really kind of fun, like Cairo bazaar things. Again, it's a little bit slapsticky at the same time being adventurous. Oh, and by the way, I haven't even mentioned the John Williams score.
This iconic is iconic music.
Oh, this is like prime stuff. You know,
he also didn't mention the goose stepping monkey.
Oh yeah, yeah, the Nazi monkey.
Yeah,
crazy.
No, I actually wrote down in my notes within the first 5 minutes of the movie, maybe just because I've seen a ton of movies from Spielberg and Lucas, but this movie is the entire look of a Spielberg and Lucas movie. Just the first 10 minutes of it, you can tell. So,
well, yeah, it's everything that they loved as kids. That, you know, we are seeing the same thing in J.J. Abrams movies lately.
Lens flare.
Yeah. For sure. So we have this whole goofy chase scene where Marion gets stuck in a basket. And then you end up with, the running joke of like, oh, the bad guy's wearing the red fez and he's on the airplane. And you go to the airplane and everybody's wearing a red fez. That's kind of how the joke is. And then, of course, the iconic scene. And I don't know the long told tale of how Harrison Ford was sick with the flu. She brings the story down these days, doesn't it? But he was still shooting on the set.
I think it was food poisoning.
Oh, maybe. Yes. Yeah. So he was supposed to have like a sword fight with this expert Arab swordsman. But instead he just looks at him and shakes his head and pulls his gun and shoots him, which is hilarious.
It's very comedic. It's a laugh out loud moment.
It is. No, it's a wonderful moment. It's as good a moment or better than the not laugh out moment later in the movie where he's having a fist fight with the guy that ends up getting hit with the airplane propeller.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just had one of those lately here locally, and it's a nightmare of mine.
Because you're around a lot of 1930s prop planes, are you?
Well, you live in Anchorage.
There's a lot of props. There's
a lot of prop planes. No, this happened on Lake Hood. Very experienced pilot. You know, things happen. Yeah.
Props and tail rotors. Very terrifying.
Yeah.
You can't see them.
No. And all it is one wrong turn. I've never been in a helicopter before. And I don't have that same thing Drew has about flying necessarily. But what I can tell you for sure is I would like have to army crawl to get to the helicopter because I'm so scared of getting hit by the rotor, even it's probably like 6 feet over my head. Wouldn't matter.
Neither of you have watched Succession, right?
No.
Succession is about like a an analog of a of like the Murdoch family.
Ah.
So they're all like super rich and the kids were born super rich.
Brian Cox.
Yes. It's a fantastic show. But they sent the actors to like rich person school, like learn how do rich people act. And Jeremy Strong, I think, is the name of the actor. And he said one of the things that they really focused on was there's a lot of helicopters in the show because they travel around because they're rich. He said people who are born rich don't duck when they're around helicopters because they've been around them their whole lives.
Interesting. So,
a little touch like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess they didn't see Dawn of the Dead.
Surely not.
God, that's a brilliant piece of special effects there. Just the audacity to do that makes me smile. Okay. So, blah, blah, blah. We have this whole chase where Marion gets kidnapped and Indy's trying to find her and eventually finds the vehicle she's been loaded into. That vehicle, through a series of being shot at and whatnot, ends up crashing and exploding. So we think Marion is dead. Otherwise, I told my daughter, she's the main character. She didn't die. Not that kind of movie.
Yeah. And, you know, he seems bummed about it, but not that upset.
No. Evidence of his crime is gone.
Well, he's got this. He's lost his ball and chain. It's a free man now.
He doesn't have to pay her the money.
Yeah. So he drowns his sorrows in alcohol at a nearby tavern, but is met with more Nazis who escort him to a table where he finds Belloc, who is a skeezy guy, a Kevin Spacey type. But luckily, even though he's surrounded by Nazis, he gets saved because Sala sends some children to rescue him, which is very clever. So they go and visit the shaman who reads the inscriptions, and the inscriptions have the clever trope of on the one side, it says, this is exactly how long the staff is. And you flip the other side over, it says, minus one.
Well, it's exactly how long the staff is, and this is exactly where you put it.
Yes.
And then, yeah, on the other side, it says, and then take one step back.
Yeah, yeah. So
and shake it all about.
Exactly. So this works out great. Because as we will soon know, or we will, if you haven't already guessed, when Tot grabs the burning hot headpiece in Marion's bar, it was burning down. It burned the inscription on his hand.
Brands him.
So they were able to reconstruct it using his branding. Yeah, but of course they only have the one side. So. There we go. They're digging in the wrong place, as it turns out, for the Well of Souls. So, Indy gets lowered into the map room, which, as it turns out, is not a room full of maps. It's like a little diorama in there, or a three-dimensional architectural drawing of the town. Not drawing. You know, architectural representation of the town. Anyway, very impressive. Miniatures. It feeds that, you know, whatever that thing is I like about those. So, headpiece, Angel Sing, blah, blah, blah. So they find the location and they're sneaking around the camp and Indy is shocked to find Marion alive, but bound and gagged. Now this is a 1930s thing. Drew, is it the Wonder Woman movie?
Professor Marsden and his Wonder Woman?
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of bound and gag stuff in that movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is a Wonder Woman trope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very World War One, evidently. So now World War Two, you got Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS. Whole different genre. Blah, blah, blah. Marion's alive. He can't cut her loose because that will reveal his presence to the Nazis. So he leaves her there. But later that afternoon, Indy and Sala sneak a digging party of their own into the actual location of the Well of Souls. And late into the night, they finally reveal the roof of the chamber, and to Indy's horror, it is filled with dangerous snakes.
He hates snakes.
He hates them.
Indy clears the area of snakes with burning torches and lowers himself to the chamber and burns many of the snakes alive with gasoline.
That's how much he hates snakes.
Yes. Sala follows, and the two eventually find the gigantic stone chest containing the Ark. They remove it and place it in a crate. And just after Sala hoists himself out, the rope is dropped into the hole, and Belloc appears with Dietrich. Dietrich, by the way, is another Nazi guy. Belloc brags again about having stealing Indy's find, and now he'll seal him in the chamber to die. But before he seals him in the chamber, they throw Marion down. Although Belloc has now fallen for Marion. Actually, not fallen for her. He just wants her as booty, literally and figuratively. He wants to use her for his own French purposes, which are different than German purposes, but seems similarly unpleasant for Marion. So Marion and Indy have to fight off the snakes. And Indy notices, this is, by the way, I love this set piece. With all the snakes and the gigantic statue and the holes in the wall, it makes no real sense. Like, if you think about it too hard, it really doesn't make any sense, but it sure is fun to watch. So, blah, 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 he ends up crashing through the thing to get away from the snakes, and they escape. Again, makes no sense, but it's fun to watch. So, they end up on the surface and discover an airfield where a Nazi flying wing plane is waiting to fly the Ark out. And the two sneak up on the plane, but Indy's attacked by a mechanic, and there's this prolonged fight that ensues where they're joined by a burly German soldier.
Yeah, why does the bruiser have to take his shirt off? What was the point?
Oh, it's a whole thing. This is a professional wrestler move.
Yeah, when you're that huge, you have to take off your shirt.
It was almost already off anyway.
No, this is a guy who waxed his mustache. I'm just saying.
Is that a euphemism?
Probably. Yes, that too. So we have this, again, whole thing with Marion being stuck inside the plane and the one guy with the gun and the other guy who's beating the crap out of Indy. And then we have the shot being fired into the gas tank or whatever, and it's going to flow and gonna explode, and everything's, it's all a ticking time bomb. And then a guy gets hit by an airplane propeller and the audience cheers. I mean, it's actually like you're happy for that because it saves Indy.
He gets juiced.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like a juicer, not because he got his head cut off.
Yes.
Gotcha.
All I could think of, I was trying to think of a juice thing, all I could think of was oil of oh no. That doesn't even make sense.
And yet, damn it, I just laughed at it.
Thank you. Yeah, despite yourself. So, blah, 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 the plane explodes, but Indy and Marion escape, and they take the Ark, put it on a truck, and they're going to drive it to Cairo. Then we have a car chase scene. Which, again, is fun. It's not Fast and the Furious, but it's still fun.
Did you notice at hour 23 there was the Wilhelm screen?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ah! I love the Wilhelm scream. And the fact that we know about it makes me happy. All this fighting, I'm yada-yadding through fun stuff. But then Indy forces Dietrich and Belloc's car off the road. They end up keeping the truck with the Ark in it. And they board a tramp steamer. That will take him to a safer location. But that steamer is it's probably a sexual position or act known as the tramp steamer. So that ship containing the Ark gets stopped by a Nazi submarine. And the ship's captain tells Belloc and Dietrich to take the Ark and leave Marion behind for his own amusement. Oh, Marion's not going to fare well in this thing. If it's just one thing goes poorly, it's all going to go very poorly.
Oh, according to the Urban Dictionary, tramp steamer is when during or after sex in a car, otherwise fogged up environment, one presses their partner against the glass to expose their face, breasts, or genitals.
That's way more tame. Yeah. Than I expected it to be.
It was a great night until he gave me a tramp steamer in the parking lot.
See, and I was thinking it was going to be something to do with like a Dirty Sanchez, which you could use the same sentence in, by the way.
So you were thinking of like the Cleveland steamer.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
The Cincinnati hoo-ha or whatever.
The rusty trombone.
The Country Bumpkin.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Okay.
Don't look any of these up, Mom.
We're fucking off the rails. So funny. The sub grabs the Ark and Marion, blah, blah, blah. And Indy has... he performs a miraculous feat that they just gloss over, which I think is pretty great. Because ostensibly, this sub goes many miles, maybe thousands of miles, right?
Yes.
Yeah. With Indiana Jones, like, what, hanging on to the bumper of?
Yes.
But that's okay. Again, this is an action-adventure movie. So the sub goes into the sub dock, which is what, like a fake island a la James Bond or something?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it didn't really matter.
No, not really. So Indy sees Marion being escorted off the sub. He knocks out a sentry and steals his uniform, a comically small uniform. Everybody goes inland where they're going to do something, have some sort of... They're going to perform some sort of ceremony. Belloc wants to perform some sort of ceremony with the Ark before he gives it to the Germans. So everybody goes to this canyon, and Indy pins him down with a rocket launcher, but he's not going to kill Marion or destroy the Ark because he's an archaeologist.
Yeah, Belloc calls his bluff.
Yes. By the way, since nobody knows what's inside the Ark, they know that Indy is just as intrigued as anybody. Plus, would never destroy this antiquity. So then there's this elaborate ceremony involving robes and stuff, and Indy and Marion are tied to a pole. Again, this is very Professor Whatever and the Wonder Women. And they open the Ark, and it contains nothing but sand.
Or does it?
Ostensibly, the remains of the stone tablets. But as soon as it's opened, its spirits suddenly appear.
No, before they appear, there's enough time for the Germans to mockingly laugh at Belloc.
Yes. So, Indy, who remembers an ancient code that requires people to close their eyes and not look at the spirits, yells for Marion to do the same. And this crazy mayhem, which, you know, I mean, the special effects don't exactly hold up as far as, like, the swirling spirits.
Or the Beetlejuice melty faces.
Oh, well, the melty faces are great. I think the melty faces are fantastic. I mean, yeah, it's goofy, but it certainly was horrifying at the time.
Yeah. I remember it being super scary as a kid.
Yeah. But once you saw the first special feature that shows how they made it with the wax mask and melting the wax and... Anyway, bad shit happens to all the Nazis. Dietrich and Tot's faces melt, and Belloc explodes, and the energy mass surges high into the night sky, carrying every corpse toward the heavens, before returning to the Ark and resealing it, leaving Indy and Marion drained but freed. That's how you feel after a tramp steamer. So, weeks later, Indy and Marcus feud with the army officers over the whereabouts of the Ark. Indy is angry with the army and says they have no idea what was in the Ark, although we find out that they actually probably do. And we see the final scene of the movie is fucking great. And is this the whole premise of Warehouse 13?
Probably.
I think so. Where the Ark is sealed in a wooden crate, stamped, do not open or whatever, and wheeled into a large warehouse containing thousands of other crates like this. That right there, that's fantastic. I love that. What a visual, what a thought. What a movie. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Da-da-da-da.
Keep going.
I can't because in my head it turns right into the A-Team.
I was going to say, very much sounded like the A-Team.
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Now I'm just playing the Greatest American Hero theme in my head.
Oh, there you go. Hey, believe it or not. So, I guess Jason, notes?
Nah, we talked about all of them.
Drew, notes, thoughts before we give our final rendition or summation?
I can wait.
Okay.
I don't want to break format.
You know? Okay, no, it's fine. So, Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
To me, this is like a C+, B- movie-ish. I mean, it's fine. If you haven't seen it, it's probably great. But having seen this recursively throughout my childhood, I think it, I don't know that viewing it as an adult did it a lot of service in my memory. So,
oh man, I'm worried about you for Temple of Doom. I really am.
No, it's funny because, I totally agree with you. I mean, I probably think it's like a B+ movie because I think it definitely succeeds in what it's trying to do. But for me, the nostalgia factor just cranks it right up to an A+. Like, I forgive a lot of sins because this movie was formed the way I looked at lots of action adventure movies.
Yeah, I think this is like the highest quality camp. Because this is certainly a campy movie, but like the best example of it. And I mean, it's, we've said iconic several times. Everything about this is iconic. You have the iconic hero. Things in this movie seem like cliches now, but it's because of this movie that they became cliches. This movie is full of, like, Indiana Jones is now an archetype. That's how you describe other characters. He's an Indiana Jones type. And the genesis of that was in this movie. I don't think the movie holds up. I mean, Harrison Ford is super charming. Karen Allen is super charming. The villains are just so villainous. It's great. The performances are fun. All of the action is really fun and really creative. And then you still have like the mystery and the kind of fetch quests that are really fun too. Like everything about the movie, it's silly. For having a movie with like Nazis and threats of bodily harm and rape and melting faces, it's like a really good fun time. In a way that it shouldn't be. And the opening scene is so iconic that it's been parodied, I think, in Weird Al videos, right?
Oh, sure.
Just all over the place. I think this movie was great. It was a lot of fun. It's really easy to watch. It books along. It's relatively long, but it goes by really fast.
Yeah, I think it's what it does successfully what every James Bond movie is trying to do. I mean, it takes these set pieces and it just runs through them in a way that is really pleasant. And, you know, I think we need to thank one Mr. John Williams as much as Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
Because without that score running through this movie, it's just not quite as good a movie. It's just, to me, this is a fantastic example of how a score just makes a movie.
Yeah. And the first time you hear it, it gives you chills.
Yeah.
I want to know how they got it and how they managed to roll it out in Germany, because you wouldn't be able to have any of the Nazi references.
Well, I don't know. Good question.
I'm just pondering what that version would have looked like, because they would have had to, you couldn't have any of the Nazi flags or symbols. So,
you know, if this were modern times, they could just change them into Chinese. But you couldn't really do that in 1981. That's the other thing, 1981.
By the way, I just got a comment, a text message from our mother about this movie, because she asked me what movie we were talking about. She said, I loved that movie, although it had as much to do with Harrison Ford and the hype as it did the plot. but as an Agatha Christie fan, this felt like it was very familiar.
Huh.
Which is kind of true.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got caught up in a nostalgia for just a second on the text that you sent us.
Yeah.
With the boss's joystick. Oh, my God.
Yes.
The giant red button.
The giant clicky red buttons. Mm-hmm. But the axis adjustments.
Yes.
Ugh. You know, for all the millennials and Gen Zers, whatever, people that grew up in the posts, the Nintendo 64 or further period, that kind of rag on what Atari 2600 games were like. Atari 2600 had the best controllers. Durable. How many times did our father throw a joystick across the room? And granted, every system came up with a newer, flashier, better controller, adding more bells and whistles. But, you know, there's something magical about just that Atari joystick with the one button.
Or sometimes you had to be careful and fold a piece of paper under the cartridge of the Atari to make sure it didn't fall out when you were playing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cartridge games.
But just the tactile satisfaction you got when you had to plug in like the 16-pin connector to yes. to use the paddles.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Kids, you have something similar. I just don't know what it is because I'm an old. So, housekeeping?
Yeah, so I might be stuck in Willow for a couple months.
Yeah, no kidding.
I don't know if you heard, Jason, but tonight we got an official interstate travel ban.
Oh, I didn't see that. You're not supposed to travel between cities?
Yes. Traveling from community to community is banned.
Oh. By car?
It doesn't specify mode of transportation.
Wild. This is breaking news. So our parents could be stuck in Sunrise.
Yeah. I mean, technically.
Yeah. Who's going to enforce that?
I don't think the intent is, you know, if you're going from your one household to your other household.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's like, you know, don't, if you're in Wasilla, don't go visit Fairbanks.
Yeah. Maybe don't go to Costco in Anchorage.
Right. But yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. We got a statewide social distancing mandate tonight. You didn't see that one either?
No.
Yeah, that's now statewide. I mean, officially prohibits all public gatherings, including faith-based gatherings, funerals, weddings.
Yeah.
Banned.
Well, okay, so last week, I don't know if it made the podcast or not, but I was sort of heaping scorn upon the Matsu Valley and the communities within the Matsu Valley about not taking the hunker down seriously or whatever. Mm-hmm. Turns out, I found out that if you are not a certain class of city or municipality, you don't have the right to give those orders. Like, Wasilla could not tell people to close their restaurants. They're not a class 3 city, so they didn't have that ability.
It has to come from the governor?
You know, well, I think the borough could have done it. But yeah, definitely, I think that's why the governor did it, because there's so many places that can't do it on their own anyway. So, but I think, at least for my job, the next week is really going to tell the tale about how this is going to turn. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned it on last week's podcast, but, you know, as of recording on this date, 85 cases in Alaska.
Yeah, up from I think last week at this time it was 16 cases or something. And it's still because nobody's getting tested.
Yeah.
I mean, those are people that are in hospitals right now. It's fascinating.
We had our first in-state death tonight.
Oh, really? Because we had an Alaskan who died outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's going to start touching people we actually know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hey, here's something. Here's something I learned not to do. So when I go to the grocery store, and I do it sparingly because, you know, I don't want to expose me or my family or whatever to whatever, but you know, we do need provisions here and there. So whenever I do that, I've been hitting up the old folks to say, hey, to ask them, hey, is there anything I can pick up for you? And they've been usually yeah, sure, if you're out there. And so I asked him, I think on Wednesday, I said, on my way home, I'm going to try to hit a store. And is there anything you need? And he said, yeah, a couple of lemons, a couple of limes, and a jar of yeast. Like, yeah, okay, no problem. And they're like, you know, we can do without all that stuff, but whatever. So I go to the store. I find all those things. Actually, it turns out the grocery stores are looking a little bit more stocked right now. Partly because I think they're really, people are starting to embrace that we really have to play well together. And partly because they're limiting how many things you can buy of each type, which is helpful. But I texted mom and dad on the way out there saying, I think maybe while mom was on the phone with you, Jason, I texted her saying, hey, I'm in route your house with stuff, but I'm not going to stay in chit chat today because I'm losing my voice and, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm fine, but. And then mommy instantly responds with,
leave this stuff on the porch.
Well, no, even before that, she's like, can you get a test? I'm like, no, nobody can get a test. I'm not sick. I don't have any other symptoms. I talk for 12 hours a day and, you know, it's allergy season, you know, post nasal drip probably. But yeah. I can understand. I mean, I don't want to kill my parents. So mm-hmm. I literally left the stuff on the porch.
Yes. That's what.
When dad answered the door, he was wearing gloves. I think it's because he was painting. I don't know for sure. But I walked away and yelled at them, wash your citrus. Because, you know, that's the right thing to do anyway.
Yeah, I had to pick something up from them maybe the day before that. And they left it on the porch for me. And they came to the screen door and the window to kind of say hi. And
East Berlin meets West Berlin.
Yeah, I told him, hey, this is what it would have been like if you'd ever had come visit me in prison.
Or vice versa.
Thank you, because they did not seem to think that was funny.
So that's just funny stuff. Now, God forbid anybody gets sick, and this is, you know, that's the thing that, if there's any schadenfreude in this whole thing, it's all these politicians that just poo-pooed the thing from the beginning. Like, I don't wish Boris Johnson any ill. But just a couple days ago, he was saying, I'm still going to shake hands with everybody. I'm a jovial guy. I'm Boris Johnson. He does not speak with that accent.
Well, the pastor that claimed it was a hoax that is now dead from it.
Yeah, there's that.
I mean, I'm not wishing death on anybody, but like seriously, what kind of hubris?
Did you hear the Rachel Maddow thing about Tupelo, Mississippi? It was, you know, the thing about Rachel Maddow is she tells good stories.
Yes.
So she talks about Tupelo, Mississippi, you know, birthplace of Elvis.
Oh.
The mayor of Tupelo and the city council of Tupelo had the whole lockdown thing, you know. The governor has said, you know, we're not Chinese. We're not going to lock down. Yeah. I'll never order a lockdown or whatever. So like the cities are like having to say, okay, well, you know, that's fine. But on our community level, we're going to have a look, it'll stay in place or whatever, shelter in place law order. So the governor seemingly saw the light, and he gave a press conference. He said, you know what, I am gonna, you know, this is a serious thing, so I am gonna order a statewide mandate that tells you to lock down non-essential businesses. And then, and says, oh, by the way, just so everybody knows, I'm the only one in the state that can make these orders. It's the governor's level or none. If you're a local city, you can't make these rules, by the way, just because of our constitution or whatever. And so there's a lockdown on every non-essential business, and then proceeded to make every business essential. Like restaurants you can dine in, you can go to your office building because that's an essential place, no matter what you do.
But by the way, just to point out the fact that he says it's not China and then he acts as a dictator over his local constabularies, isn't that a bit of a dictatorship like China?
Well, okay, so one of my childhood friends posted, who is definitely way more right-wing than any of us, you know, just did a cryptic quote that said, like, you know, with a Patrick Henry, give me liberty or give me death. And I wanted to engage, but I'm not going to engage. But in my brain, I'm thinking, yeah, sure. Patrick Henry was talking about people, or he was talking about overthrowing the shackles of a dictatorship, blah, blah, blah. He was fighting men in a war. At the very least, he was going to say, give me liberty, give me death, because I'm going to fight against these people and die a hero's death in battle, which is noble and stuff, although it means you're still dead, by the way. But you know what? You can't stand up and say, I've got more balls than this virus. Like, I will beat down this virus because of my strength of will.
Yeah.
No, you can't G. Gordon Liddy this thing.
Oh, well. That was a nice reference.
Thank you.
Were you just trying to work that in?
No.
No. No. All right. Impressive.
Organic.
Yeah. Yeah. If it, you know, you only go off on so many tangents that go nowhere before you stumble upon one that actually goes somewhere.
Very good.
Yeah. So, Brother Jay?
I heard you have some news.
Yeah, none of it for the podcast.
Okay, I have one more thing, and then we can sign off. Like, I think I told you about kick bikes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got Journey that Mongoose scooter. Well, I bought myself the brand is XOOTR. It's a kick scooter. You can look it up. It's a kick scooter that will hold up to 800 pounds, so I can squeak in there. It turns out it looks so cool. Kelly wants one too, because she saw it originally, and then when we saw the kick bike, she's like, oh, that seems much more easy to deal with. But no, the foot base, the skateboard part of it is nice and big and wide and easily fits two adult feet. So if you're going to be gliding on it, you know, just coasting,
nice,
comfortable. It's got like these sealed bearing like aircraft stuff, and it's made out of like solid metal, so it's hopefully not gonna break underneath in normal wearing conditions. The only thing is, you know, it's the back brake is your typical kick scooter brake where you just like stand on the fender, so if you skid out you could like flatten a part of your wheel because it's solid wheels instead of the blow up wheels like Journey has.
No, they're not too expensive.
No, actually, considering the kick bikes, they're more expensive than a Razor scooter. But yeah, to hold my big fat ass, it'll be fun. So we'll see. I could dislocate my knee or break my hip. But damn it, I'm going to do something outdoors. Get my kid out of the house. Because, you know, there's not as much to do here unless you force yourself to do it. And, you know, Kelly and Journey have class, like, all throughout the day, as it turns out. Did I mention my internet is kind of suffering a little bit? Anyway.
It's interesting because 2.5 or 3 weeks ago, for whatever reason, I periodically review the internet service here because my service is through Comcast, and it's always like they always have some new deal every 3 months, it seems. And the last couple of years, I didn't check it. It turns out I was paying more per month for the service I had when there was a faster service for less money per month.
I hate that.
And it just infuriates me. So now I check it. So anyway, I was checking it, and sure enough, like my speed was like my guaranteed speed was like 250 megabit service. And for less a month now, I can get 600 megabit per second service. So I did that. I did that like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I guess. And so we're kind of reaping the benefit of that now because they're, you know, Jesse's home more. He got reduced an hour, so he's home more. And they lifted their data caps, so we're not going to hit any kind of arbitrary limit. So we're lucky there.
It's good and bad. I mean, it's good for sure. But yeah, it's like, now these damn neighbors are draining me down, man. You know, that's when because just like everything, I'm a moron, you know, I was a DSL snob. The idea is, you know, hey, a DSL line is just go straight to the phone company, right? So your service is not degraded by the neighbor's internet usage. Of course, it turned out to be rapidly the slowest service available. Yeah, it had no data caps, but yeah, you wouldn't need data caps because you would never be able to do any, you know, any kind of data you'd be doing would take you every single day.
We now offer unlimited 4 megabytes per second.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, changing to a cable modem changed the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now we're at least up to regular speed. Oh, well. Hey, someday we'll have another phone company up here, a wireless company. Although I think maybe one of the big ones is going to buy GCI.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
Well, they already sold it to an outside company. It's not an Alaskan company anymore, but I think, yeah, they're going to sell it to like Verizon or is it T-Mobile Sprint? Anyway. Okay, so to our listeners, again, if you're listening away in the future, I hope you're doing well.
Wash your filthy hands.
No matter when you're listening, I hope you're doing well. This is an interesting phenomenon. Maybe for the first time in history, we have a global event that the entire world gets to watch together at the same time and communicate about together. I mean, that's the thing, is that the reason why it's this virus is going to be everywhere sooner than it would be normally is because unlike in the Spanish flu days, we just take planes everywhere. But the advantage is we have this instant communication. Well, yeah, we used to. Yeah. So, hey, your mail service is going to drain if we don't have any planes going anywhere. I mean, cargo planes take mail too, but if the passenger planes aren't flying, that means it's going to take a hit on mail service.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll all appreciate mail more. We'll appreciate mail and toilet paper and ramen a lot more than we ever used to. So. And actually, just the ability to send out a podcast to the world, if nothing else, it's kind of fun. So wherever in the world you are, stay safe. Don't touch each other too much. Pretty shallowly. And we'll talk to you next week.
Jesus.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe rambling. That's the brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.